From McMinnville, Oregon, this is Crisscrossing Science, the podcast whose pants were stolen by ants. I'm Michael Crosser, next to me is Chad Tilburg, and today's title is The King of the Forest.
Queen.
Actually, that would be hilarious. I like that. That is it right,
right there.
Right
there.
The title is The King of the Forest. The Queen. All right, sorry. Hey, yeah. Chad.
How you doing, Mike?
Doing well. So we have a special guest star in the studio today.
Yes, we do. I'm very happy to welcome Dr. Terry McGlynn.
Hi.
Hi, Terry. Terry is actually my academic big brother.
Oh.
And it's true fact. We were both at University of Colorado together in Dr. Mike Breed's lab.
For about 6 months, we shared the same space.
Yeah. He's been a good big brother to me all these years.
That's why he gave you a noogie as soon as we walked in.
Right. He wrestled me into a head,
headlock
and gave me a noogie. Yeah.
You got to keep him in line.
Yeah. Right. So Terry's currently a professor at Cal State Dominguez Hills. You're also director of undergraduate research there. Is that?
That's yes? true.
And he also has a blog called Small Pond Science, which I really like, by the way. I really like how it has like a mix of discussion of current science kinds of things, as well as a lot of life in academia from a really interesting perspective of being at a Cal State school.
So, awesome. Yeah. I'll have to check that out then.
Yeah.
It is not about the biology of small ponds, but like being right. in a small pond institution.
Oh. Yeah.
Get it?
I see what you did there.
Get it?
All right.
Yeah.
But so today, though, we're here to talk about ants, I would imagine.
Of course. What else? Yeah. What else is there, really?
Yeah. Well, they are the queen of the forest.
Huh?
That's right.
So,
the queens.
Yeah. And I think some of the work that you've been doing somewhat recently, Terry, is on these thief ants. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's about?
Yeah. So thieving ants. I'm starting with an aside, which is never good. But oddly enough, there are actually other ants that people call thief ants that do something entirely different, which yet is a problem when we use common names. So thieving ants, it's one of the few cases in the world of social insects where individuals of the same species, but in different colonies, will sneak into one another's colonies and then steal that food and then bring it back to her own sisters back at home. And so usually when you have social insects, ants, bees, or whatnot, come upon an individual from a different neighboring colony, it's like all out war. It's like, oh, I hate you. Oh, I'm going to fight you and kill you. But they don't seem to really do this.
Yeah, that's the whole social insect thing.
Yeah, so they're not very social.
Well, they're social among their nest mates.
I get it. Okay. Right.
But the whole thing about being a social insect is that you also vigorously exclude in a very violent way members that are not part of your nest.
So the I spent a long time trying to find out who said this first, but what makes social insects ecologically and evolutionary successful, arguably, is that they're a factory within a fortress. Basically, every kind of social insect lives in a highly defended or defensible space. Either they physically defend it by attacking you, or it's difficult to access, like a termite nest.
Okay.
But then inside, they can have a high level of productivity. So every individual in the colony, on average, produces more offspring than you would expect if they were just to be on their own or not social.
Hmm.
Okay.
But normally they have a bunch of different jobs, right? So faithful listeners of the Crisscrossing Science will know that we've talked about ants a few times.
I wonder why that would be.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Just, yeah.
And so I encourage you to go back and listen to those as well. Whatever episodes those were, I don't remember. So ants and all you social insects have a queen, but then they also have some workers some workers are the guards protecting this fortress, as you said, and then others are out farming and gathering things. Is that correct?
Foraging, getting for
foraging.
Food. Yeah, exactly. And then they're tending to the nest, caring for their brood. And then depending upon certain kinds of specialized social insects, they might have particular jobs based on what they're doing. Like in fungus growing insects, there actually are ants that are farming fungus inside their nest.
I thought of the farming because we had talked about aphids or something.
Yeah. Oh.
So that's sort of like ranching cattle.
Right. Ah, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've heard people call aphids ant cows.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you heard
that? I have not, but I'm going to start calling them that from now on.
And then like, you know, cows, they'll occasionally eat them just like we occasionally eat cows.
Yep.
As a species.
Right. Yeah.
So we've got these thieving ants then. And so these are in the genus Ectotoma.
Right.
Right. Are there any other genera that have been shown to exhibit this thieving behavior?
There's one other species of ant in Japan that's been studied a little bit, but in general seems to be a relatively unique thing. And not it's not known from any other species in this one genus. It's just known in this one
particular species. Ruidum.
Right.
And so tell us a little bit about what is it that these ants are doing that is so peculiar, and how was that first discovered?
So the way I heard about how it was figured out was that the way that you find an ant nest oftentimes is what you do is you find a foraging ant and you give her a little piece of food or you put out it for her and she collects it, and then she'll walk back to her nest. And so otherwise, if you were to try to find an ant's nest by just finding the hole in the ground or wherever they're nesting or under a rock, that sometimes takes a long time. But if you just follow a foraging ant, then she could wander around for a whole hour before she goes home. But if you feed her and you give her something good, then she'll often just walk in a straight line back to the nest.
Hmm. I thought they were like Hansel and Gretel or something, that they kind of left. I thought they would just sort of backtrack.
Pheromone trail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sort of depends on, there are many different kinds of foraging strategies in ants. These ants, their home meter is just a few or several square meters. So we're in like a room which is the size of, I would say a normal bedroom, but it's actually twice the size of my bedroom in the little studio that we're in. And so, and I would say the area of the studio is maybe one or two home ranges of an ant colony of these thieving ants.
Okay.
And so when these ants leave, they just forage around in a relative random walk, although they seem to focus on areas where they found food recently. And when they find that, then they just walk in a straight line back to their nest. How they are capable of performing that orientation, I'm not sure is known, but ants are actually kind of amazing at that. And then different kinds of ants find their ways home differently depending on who they are and what they're doing. So in the course of doing experiments, finding colonies and mapping out their home ranges and various colonies, what was seen was that when an ant is carrying into this piece of food, she brings it underground into their little hole. And these ants, it's kind of adorable. Their hole is so small that they can't walk in head first. If they have a piece of food, they have to back in with a little food and drag it in through the nest entrance.
Okay.
And often there's like a little guard that hangs out deep in that entrance. So it's a little tube that goes several centimeters down before you hit a chamber. And so if you were to watch a nest and watch it, let's say you feed them a handy, nice piece of food.
Okay.
If you watch that nest after the food disappears, and if you wait anywhere between 10 seconds and a few minutes as possible, that food will pop right up, being carried by a different ant. And going in a straight line to another nest and then brings it underground. And then it's possible that that same thing could happen again and it would go to yet another, a third nest. And so it's like they're almost looks like they're passing it around like old Christmas fruitcake that no one wants. But it's like kind of the opposite in that everyone wants it and they keep stealing it from one another. So to make the long story short, it appears every colony in this area has thieves from other colonies hanging out inside waiting for quality pieces of food. And when that quality food shows up, then they take it and they bring it back to their own nest.
So are these thieves just hanging out somewhere along that first tunnel or in that first chamber?
That's a good question. That's what scientists say when they don't know the answer. Right. Yeah. If you try to recreate this in the lab, then we couldn't exactly know what's happening in the field. And so I personally have not set up ants thieving from one another in a lab setup. I'm not even sure how possible that is.
That seems like it'd be hard to do.
You can tell when you dig up, like we've labeled thieves and then had them hanging out inside colonies and then dug up those colonies. And you can tell that the other ants in the colony treat the thieves differently. If you just were to have them in a box, then you could see the ones that are being ostracized, or maybe ants tend to aggregate around one another and they don't tend to aggregate around the thieves. There might be slight levels of mini aggression. They treat them in it and not as a friendly manner as you would want. And so I've dug up colonies where I haven't marked ants. I've seen the same thing. And I'm like, oh, I would totally bet you those are the thieves.
Yeah.
So it seems there are several thieves in there, not just like one lone.
And possibly from more than one neighboring colony then.
Right. And so the thieves inside a nest only will steal to one particular nest. And so if you dig up one colony, you could have multiple thieves, which would be coming from multiple nests. So these ants nest in really high densities. You could have many nests in a relatively small area. And so you would expect, at least in the place where I work, that they actually are all stealing from one another in a high frequency.
Okay. Do you want to talk a little bit about where this is taking place?
Yes.
Where are we in the world and what's it like?
Yeah, so I've been working in this one particular place in the rainforest in Costa Rica, and it's a really well-known destination field station called La Selva Biological Station. People come from all over the U.S., but also Latin America and other parts of the world to do research in this one place where there have been continuous data being collected from the 70s and various kinds of projects. And so it's the way my wife describes it. It's kind of like a college campus and a summer camp. So there's like an air-conditioned laboratory and internet and good resources and a well-groomed trail and a geographic information system to use that trail system. And all the data from other scientists that you might want to collaborate. You know, they cook you 3 meals a day, and there's basically dorms for you to sleep in. And so you can just focus on your science full time when you're there.
Yeah. Hmm. Great place.
Why is this such a great destination to be? Is it just because it's a dense rainforest?
All kinds of rainforest are amazing. I don't think this particular rainforest is necessarily more exciting than other rainforests. I think part of it is it's just so accessible. I mean, there are some places in Amazonia that are probably far more spectacular. Our field station that I work at has like about 430 or so ant species, but there are places that probably have even more.
Okay.
But what's neat is that I can tell you this place has 430 ant species. And what makes this rainforest exciting is that there are people that have grown up and worked there as naturalists and scientists that know so much about the biology of that particular location that you can build on that. And so if science is standing on the shoulders of other people, then people have already built an edifice that you can stand on to work even further. And that's true for all kinds of organisms.
Yeah. So let's get back to the thieving ants. A little bit more about that. Do all colonies thieve and at similar rates to each other? Or what kind of determines how a colony allocates its workforce to thieving versus other tasks like foraging?
Well, all colonies are stealing to some extent. And so we've been trying to figure out what causes some colonies to steal more, or at least what is associated with that. And it's hard.
But so the thieving is only in the same species of ant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So like if you had a black ant and a red ant, because I know what I'm talking about here, mm-hmm. the differences, that they would be like, no, you're not one of us. And would
you can't steal from us.
Only we can steal from us. Yeah. But so this is specifically, it's sort of like distant cousins that you're kind of sneaking in there. And is it that the guards just don't know the difference, that they're like, that's close enough? Or
this to me, I think, is the fascinating question, that actually the answer to this question, if we can find the answer to this question, would help us have greater insight under understanding how these social relationships and colonies evolve. So for context, what the Darwin's great problem, arguably, right, the problem of altruism, how is it that an organism would evolve to be non-reproductive? How could you forsake your own fitness? So these ants are not creating other individuals, but in general, the workers, they wouldn't even have the capacity of storing sperm to have sex with males. They're not producing, you know, sexually produced offspring. So they're letting the queens do reproducing on their behalf. And so how is it that natural selection could favor an individual that doesn't reproduce for themselves? And that's why people are interested in studying the evolution of social insect. And so the answer to that, the classic answer, is essentially that individuals in a colony are more closely related to one another compared to other colonies. So if they protect the individuals in that colony, that will help the reproduction of that colony, which then will help their fitness. Even though they're not reproducing, the sisters and the other individuals in the colony who are related to them are reproducing, and that's good for them. So the concept is that a colony in social insects is a super organism. It's like you can think of it as a single animal, but it's composed of many individuals. In terms of ecological performance, a colony is a distinct unit. So why would you have these two separate colonies allow food to be passed across from back and forth from one another? That's a problem. It doesn't make sense. And that's why it almost never happens in social insects. It's super rare. It almost never happens. And so why is it so prevalent here? And it's so overt. And the ants will see a thief and they don't punish them other than just picking them up, carrying them for about half a meter, and then dropping them off and saying, no, don't do that again. And they turn around and do it again minutes later. And so it's vexing. And so the one thing I wanted to ask is, well, what's the benefit for this? Why would they do this? And so the question is, are they really stealing, or are they basically letting them share? You know, is it like an open pantry? If you want to take some food, that's kind of okay. I'll pretend that I don't like it, but that's fine. In the end, then you'll let me do the same for you. In other words, maybe it's a diffuse form of cooperation or mutualism between colonies, where some colonies could have good times, some colonies could have bad times. And actually, where these ants live in the tropics, conditions can change really quickly. So colonies could have a lot of food now, but 3-4 months later, not, because they basically feed on the bugs in the leaf litter, and the amount of leaf litter changes.
So this might be some sort of reciprocal altruism.
Right.
In my animal behavior class, I talk about a study on vampire bats where they do something very similar to what you're describing, that they will share meals, blood meals, with each other back at the roost. And the idea is that eventually everybody's going to have a bad night. But if you're sort of like constantly sharing around, sometimes you are donating a meal, giving something up to somebody else. And then other times you are the one who's in need. And so overall, it results in the persistence of everybody.
And the glue for that in the bats, if I remember correctly, is the bats remember.
Yes.
And, right. And so the thing is, because if a bat keeps asking for a blood meal, but it never shares, then its roostmates won't be sharing with it anymore.
Yeah. They're much more likely to share with somebody they know.
Right.
Also, yeah.
Okay. But so then these ants, though, well, first of all, no one colony has just only thieves. Is that correct?
No, it seems like thieves are between 5 and 10% of the workers in the colony. Or if we've watched a colony for several weeks and we find and tag all the thieves, then that's no more than 5, 10% of the total workforce.
Oh, and so do you ever see these tagged thieves foraging, or are these tagged thieves only ever thieving?
I have only seen them thieving. I know other people have said different things, and still there's a lot more work that needs to be done.
Okay.
But back to the reciprocal altruism question, it apparently is not, which is, I wanted to test that because I thought, oh, this would solve the vexing problem. But the vexing problem about why would they steal? And so what we did this experiment where we disappeared all the thieves. The thieves had a rapture. Right.
Right. Like that show, The Leftovers.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so then we had other colonies where there was a rapture, but it was randomly done where we didn't do it to thieves, you know, for treatment and control. And then we kept doing the same removals consistently for a couple months. And so whenever we removed a thief from one colony, because once you remove thieves, they actually start creating new thieves or training them. And so we did made sure that colonies that didn't have thieves didn't create new thieves. And then
this is like Oliver.
That's nice. That's good work there.
Consider yourself part of the furniture.
And then we dug up all of these colonies and looked at their productivity. And so what we looked at the number of baby ants that were, so that in ant development, they lay eggs, which turn into larvae, which turn into bigger larvae, then bigger larvae, and then they turn into pupae, which then hatch into adults. And so we counted up the pupae. And so basically they said, how successful were they at gathering food and then creating new ants? And it turned out that when we disappeared the thieves compared to controls, productivity went up by like 25%.
So a life of crime doesn't pay.
Right.
It almost seems like you're saying.
It's like if you are stealing from your neighbors and your neighbors are stealing from you, it hurts everyone. It doesn't just wash out in the end. It actually, they spend so much time and effort stealing that it actually keeps them from being more successful. If you were just to walk 10 feet over and find a whole bunch of colonies that are not stealing from one another, they're doing better. So I did them a favor by removing all the thieves because it increased all their productivity.
You are tough on crime.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay. So explain a little bit more what you think the cause of having thieves. When everybody is thieving from everybody else, that results in a 25% decline in productivity. Why?
That is a good question. And we know what that means. That means I don't know. But I want to know. And I have thoughts about this. So one possibility is that ultimately, if there's a colony that chooses to not thieve, then clearly they're worse off, where they get stolen from and they're not. So think about like what is a highway like if no one is allowed to pass one another or cut one another off? Everyone's going the speed limit. The whole freeway will travel faster because no one's breaking the rules. But when there's a small number of people drive badly, then that causes everyone to brake and slow down. That's why all these rich dudes in the Bay Area want autonomous cars, is that will make traffic in the Bay Area go faster because autonomous cars can follow these simple rules that humans being can't.
Right.
And so ant colonies, same thing. If you look at a trail of ants, they actually are more efficient because individuals that are waiting to make their way into the trail wait until there's a good gap rather than just pushing their way in. So maybe in this case, these colonies are stealing from one another because they can and they benefit from it. But when everyone starts stealing, then no one benefits. But who's going to be the colony to say no? And so basically, it could be an evolutionarily stable strategy, which is not necessarily peak productivity. But if I were to impose new rules and change the system, then that could increase productivity. But that's not the way the world works. That's a possibility. Mm. Like, just for instance, if you were to put a big pile of grain out and all these pigeons were foraging at it, they'd all bump against one another to try to get at that single pile of grain. But if you distribute that pile into like five smaller piles, then the grain will disappear more quickly and more pigeons will get fed more efficiently. It's the same amount of food distributed in different ways. And so you're just changing the rules of the interaction. So it's possible that maybe they just can't. But then again, I think also might be a bizarre consequence of their genetics, right?
What do you mean by that?
It's possible. We're trying to do some work to understand where the thieves were coming from. And that involved genotyping individuals and seeing where what colony they came from. And to make the long story short, in the place where all this thieving is happening, these colonies seem to be very, very closely related to one another, to the point where it's hard to find genetic differences among them, which in the world of ants is almost rare to unseen. If they are behaving as distinct colonies, and ecologically they are distinct creatures, this because the thieves, which what we call thieves, the individuals taking food from neighboring colonies, still are rejected from the colonies they're taking the food from. They don't fight them and they don't kill them, but they pick them up and carry them away, and they do have higher aggression. And so it could be that this is some odd consequence of them just being really, really closely related to one another.
So they can slip past the guards.
Sometimes.
And generally the people are... people.
I do the same thing. Yeah.
And generally the other ants are like, you're weird, but you're one of us.
You smell just a little bit weird, but good enough.
Yeah.
Right.
And so then they let them stay in there just because they're so close to each other.
Yeah, I think once you're in the nest, you're in the nest. And so you can sneak your way in. But even how did it emerge that they developed this habit of going into neighboring colonies other than they're closely related? I mean, I don't necessarily have the answer to this. And so this is actually a project I'm interested in working on. I mean, this involves cool travel all across Central America, doing population genetic sampling and, you know.
Yeah. When I think about these game theory models, I start also thinking about cheating strategies. And one way that it seems like a colony could cheat is by having perhaps slightly better guards. So you still participate in the thieving from everybody else, but you get stolen from a little bit less than everybody else because your guards are a little bit better.
Perhaps. So what we found is in our experiments where we removed the thieves, what we found is when you take away the thieves and then you do bioassays with it, where you reintroduce individuals to see if they get rejected or not, then the rejection becomes lower. So essentially, the more thieving a colony experiences, the more vigilant they are against those thieves. And when you see less thieving, then they become less vigilant. Mm. So in that case, you'd expect sort of that's a feedback loop mechanism where, okay, I'll let you steal some, but if you steal too much, then we express higher amounts of vigilance.
Mm. Okay.
So I think that would potentially explain its persistence.
Okay. So like because guarding behavior is an investment that doesn't yield incoming food in any way, right? It's only protecting what you've got. If you are over-investing in it, then that's not going to be favored. It sounds like it's more on this kind of fluctuating thing in response to what the colony is experiencing.
Right.
So do the thieving ants and the foragers, let's talk a little bit about their behavioral differences when they're out doing their thing. Now, I mean, obviously a thieving ant is going to be coming up out of a colony where it's stolen a piece of food and it's making its way back to its home nest. But are there behavioral differences between a forager who's homeward bound and a thief?
Yeah. So when I was doing one of these projects in the field, my buddy, Professor Jenny Yant of the University of Otago, she noticed, like, you know, I think these thieves are sneaking. Like, they're just sneaky. Like, they know they're thieving.
They and look I'm like, furtive.
Yeah. And so we would observe thieves who are carrying a piece of food, and we would observe foragers who are not thieves carrying a piece of food, just walking from point A to point B, because a thief is carrying food back to her nest and a forager is carrying food back to her nest.
And so you're going to see if they're moving faster, if they're kind of running with the stolen goods?
We're seeing if they're moving faster. We also would see, like, how many other ants do they bump into, you know, because there's traffic. Right. And so are they more likely to be seen? And also these ants, I should say, are really skittish. Like if you were to see them on a piece of vegetation, you were to tap the vegetation slightly, they'll drop to the ground and then like not move. Yeah. Mm. They just get scared by people really, really easily. But also other ants. And so it's actually hard to even feed them because you take the tweezers with the food or whatever, and then you put them in front of the ant and they jump back and they freak out because they're like, oh my God, what is that? And it's like, meanwhile, most other ants, if you give them a piece of a cookie, they're like, wow, and they'll just jump and take it from you and they don't care about the forceps at all because it's sort of outside their sensory. So these ants are really, really spooky and skittish. Yeah, so it turns out that the thieves are less likely to bump into other ants going home. Like the average ant, if you give her a piece of food and let her walk like half a meter, then she's going to bump into like 1.5 or 2.5 ants on their way home. But the thieves are likely to bump into less than one ant. So they avoid interacting with other individuals because they don't want to get caught.
Wait, so normally if a forager is coming back, they're running into a bunch of different other ants.
Right, they're like, oh, excuse me.
But nobody bothers them.
From their nest or from a neighboring nest or both?
Anybody. And so what we did is we just had the ants half a meter away from their own nest and watch them walk back in a straight line. Now, once you're half a meter away, odds are most of the ants near that nest are yours. You know, you're bringing food home, right? But your thieves, even when they get close to the nest, are still avoiding interacting with other nests and they'll sneak underground. Like if there's traffic around the nest, they wait for the traffic to clear and then they go in.
Huh.
And so then also, if you spook them, then they're more likely to turn around and run away. But also, another thing is if you...
Do they drop the food?
Exactly where I was going. So if you actually were to pick them up by the back hind legs, the average ant will drop the food about half the time, maybe a third of the time. But the thieves will drop it like 2/3 of the time. So the thieves, like, oh, they're acting guilty and they drop the food because they knew they were getting caught.
This is the Han Solo. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Which I found, so that was a very clear, obvious, quantifiable thing. Like when you're thieving, if you get caught, then you're going to drop the food if you're a thief. More likely to. So I was saying, oh, that shows these thieves are like a different caste essentially because we saw thieves thieving and non-thieves just foraging or whatever. Now, it could be said that maybe they're not necessarily specialized thieves, but that thieving behavior is conditional, that you can get spooked when you're a thief, but then also when you're foraging, then you won't be spooked as much. So just because thieves behave differently doesn't necessarily mean that they're own caste.
Because you tagged some thieves... And some of them would forage still.
Not me. Whenever we saw thieves, they seemed to be going directly from one nest to another or transporting that food back. There's a lot going on that we don't know. See, here's the thing. Is like I'm talking about this like scientists have discovered this. We know these things because science has established this. But really, there's like a few people that have gone out to a place where these ants are and they run experiments for days or weeks or maybe months at a time. And then they go back to wherever they live. And so I don't really know entirely what's going on here, but I'm excited to find out when I have the chance.
Very cool. Were there any other questions? This is the weird thing. I was going to bring you a present, actually, and I forgot. Because I had a mass suicide of these ants in my freezer. A few of them, I don't know, they decided, let's go in his freezer, and then they all froze to death. And my freezer is full of these frozen ants all over the place.
I had the same thing happen to me once in my lab, and I don't know how or why this. Do you know about this? Have you experienced this? Okay, so we've both had this common experience. So in my lab, it was infested with Argentine ants, and there would be a big trail of them going into the freezer. It was just a regular freezer where it's like the door on the top and you open it. And I just would keep like stuff in the lab there. And there would be a trail just marching into there and they'd march in and then promptly die. And thousands of dead ants in my freezer over the course of like a few weeks. and so I don't know how this happens because the ants, it's not as if they're getting like food from there, taking it home and saying, right, come on back. And so... by the way, the name Argentine ants is weird because obviously Argentina has like many, many hundreds of species. Yeah. You go to Argentina and you ask for an Argentine ant and they'll just like, look at you funny, yeah, right?
It's like asking for a French fry in France.
Yeah,
exactly. I assume. Or, right, or a Belgian waffle.
Or Swedish meatball.
Yeah. So I know people say like with electrical equipment, it's possible theoretically that an ant could get shocked and they would release pheromones that could attract other ants. And then they all then show up and get zapped. And so you have a bunch of dead things in an electrical. Yeah, so I don't know why the heck they go into freezers and die like that. Like, I don't have a clear, obvious explanation. But it's nice to see someone else experiencing that.
We should write a paper. Yeah. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much.
This was thanks, Terry.
Pretty interesting.
Cool. Okay, kind of, we went all over the place. I hope that's not a problem.
Yeah, we did.
No, that's
typical.
This episode was recorded in the KSLC studios on the beautiful campus of Linfield College. Rody Ortega wrote our theme music. If you have an idea for a future episode, email us at crisscrossingsci@gmail.com. All one word, all lowercase. And we will try to put your questions into a future episode. Like us on Facebook to see what we're up to and also to see some cool content that we find. If you like this podcast, subscribe to it and you will download the latest episode as soon as it becomes available. While there, you should leave a comment and a rating. That will help other people find us later on. Until next time, thanks for listening.